The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
I'm really excited that you all are here to talk about international students. There are about more than 1 million international students that are in the U.S. total. And in the state of North Carolina, we have about 16,000 of them. And they come from 47 different countries, and 16 of those countries are closed countries. And so the top five sending countries are China, India, Saudi Arabia, which I thought was interesting, South Korea, and Canada. And so these are some of the countries that students international students are coming from that are in the 1040 window. There's China, India, Iran, Kuwait, Nepal, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, South Korea, and Taiwan. And what is fascinating to me about this number is here it is that these students come from places where they have the least amount of access to the gospel. And so they go from a place where they have the least amount of access to the gospel to a place where they are supposedly supposed to have the most access to the gospel. And so for me, I'm like, wow, we have a profound opportunity to reach these students with the gospel. And yes, we do it because that's the Great Commission. And yes, we do that because they are here. But even more so than that, they go back. They go back to their home countries. They have conversations with their families. And so these students have the potential to be missionaries that go back into their context and to share the gospel and go to places that we aren't welcomed to go. And so, as you know, one of the benefits also of having them here is that it costs no money. Like, it costs absolutely no money to do that. There is no passport that is required to do this kind of work. And so for people in your church who aren't single, who aren't easily sendable, they have an opportunity to have a profound impact on reaching folks from every nation, tribe, and tongue. But I love in the book of Romans when it says, you know, how can they hear unless someone tells them, you know? And then it says, like, well, how can anybody tell them unless they've been sent? And the truth is that we've been sent. And so they've been sent here and we've been sent to share the gospel with them. And so that's really one of the things that our team is passionate about. And we've seen the Lord produce a lot of movement in that. And so now we are within the top five in our state of state conventions that are doing the most work at reaching international students. And a lot of that has to do with Tom Knight. And so Tom Knight is on our team, kind of the specialist in reaching international students. And so if you have any sort of questions about that, he has life experience, and then he's also read a lot of things on this stuff as well. And so I'm going to welcome him because it's going to be better for you to hear from him about how to reach international students.
Thank you, Yana. I'm so glad I was able to work with Yana on this presentation. But thank you guys for being here and being interested in international students. So we don't have to have a passport to go because these students are coming to us. A lot of them already have English skills. But in my experience, let me just tell you, I first got involved with international and cross-cultural ministry when I was an English teacher in China way back, way, way back. And really had a heart for reaching people in China at that time. But God brought me back here, and I was able to do international student ministry for about 14 years. But now I help churches do ministry with college students, as Yana so wonderfully showed us across the board. But I do still help people with international student ministry because that was my experience. But one of the things that I figured out very quickly in working with volunteers from different churches was that it's hard to do this ministry if we're not prepared spiritually and if we're not prepared to reach out to people who are very different from us. There's just a lot of people who just couldn't get there. And so one of the things that really helped me was to help people, okay, we need steps to be able to do this because it's a cross-cultural ministry. It's like going to another country. You've got to prepare yourself. These are not Americans. They don't necessarily think the United States is wonderful. They don't necessarily think our food is wonderful. And we've got to get out of our comfort zone and adapt and welcome them. So we want to talk a little bit about steps to cross-cultural. And the first thing is prayer. We need to prepare our hearts. We need to be praying. You've seen these verses before, probably. May God be gracious to us and bless us and keep make His face to shine upon us, that Your way may be known on earth, Your saving power among all nations. Let the peoples praise You, O God. Let all the peoples praise You. Let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for You judge the peoples with equity and guide the nations upon the earth. And so this is a great ministry where you can reach people from so many different countries. And I know some of you have already said you had two different people working with them in your home. Lots of people from different countries in Winston and in Boone. So that's just one of the things we have to do, start with prayer. But then we've got to open our minds and be willing to welcome people. And so there was a great book I read called Cross-Cultural Servanthood, and it's really about changing our heart as volunteers. And I tried to use this as ministry leaders, volunteers with people I worked with. And these first three things are so important. Being open, being willing to accept people, and in building trust with people. And I want to read this. I like this. The ability to welcome people into your presence and make them feel safe. And so for a lot of people, it's just an effort to welcome someone who's very different. And especially if you're working with someone from a different country, different religion, different culture, language issues, all these things, it can make you nervous. It can make you concerned, you know. But the first thing is just being open, accepting the person, being able to say to that person, I'm going to move over here, I value you, I accept you. And we'll see later that that's one of the things a lot of these students are looking for when they get here in a new culture. And then the trust. You're going to want to be able to build confidence, build that relationship up so that when you're speaking to them, they trust you and they're willing to listen. And it takes time. And we could go on. You know, there's other things. There's the learning part. There's understanding and serving. Eventually, this book talks about you're going to serve the person. And it was written actually for people who are going to go overseas as missionaries. But it applies to us because we're doing the same thing. It's just that they're here and we're not over there. So helping people in your church understand that, getting people to be accepting is half the battle, I feel like. And also being motivated by that spiritual component of reaching them. So here's a couple of things that can break down and stop acceptance. Some of the things we have to get over. The language barrier, the impatience that things are not the way we want it to be. It's not moving as fast. Ethnocentrism. We get so used to doing things our way that we forget that people like to do things their way, you know? Category width. Are you able to see things in different ways? Are you able to adapt mentally? And then dogmatism. And this is not about theology. This is about insisting, you know, this is how we do it here. You need to do it this way. We need to just kind of throw all that out and say, hey, let's do things your way for a while. Let's try, you know, how do you do it? Let's find out. So I think all of these things can prevent us from being open and accepting. I mean, if you can't be flexible, this is just not a ministry for you. And I think probably some of you have already realized that because you're doing this, right? This is not a ministry for everybody. But I think that we can take steps and we can learn. We can be better. If God gives you that passion, you can be better at it. So we'll keep going. So, international students, a lot of different kinds, a lot of different groups, a lot of different levels. Just real quick, one of the things that I figured out in working with internationals was that there are really a lot of different levels of students, and they have unique needs, unique problems, unique goals. And real quickly, I learned that the graduate student is very different from the person who's here learning English, and they're both very different from the person who's here as an exchange student. And with high school, this kind of next wave that's come in, we have a whole other basket of issues with that as well. So I didn't really address high school students, but they're definitely out there, and they're trying to get a leg up so they can get into schools here. But try to figure out who is the group I'm working with. Are they mostly learning English? Are they exchange students? Are they undergraduate students? Are they graduate students? Are they visiting scholars? Because they sometimes will intermingle and mix, but they really have different paths and different timelines. If you're working with exchange student, you've got 6 months to a year at the most. If you're working with a graduate student, you may have 4, 5, 6 years. So you need to think about your timeline. And we can come back for questions later about that. But just be thinking, even if you talk to people in your church and as you meet new students, figure out where they are on this scale. Again, like we said, unique needs, unique goals, unique stress for each of the students. If you've taken a psychology class, you've seen this pyramid, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I just show this people. He's not a Christian. He's got a lot of problems with his theories. But there is one thing that's true about it, is that people have different needs. And a lot of times we're trying to reach the spiritual need when they first arrive. They just want to know, where am I sleeping? Do I have my luggage from the plane flight? I'm hungry. I don't know who my friends are going to be. I don't know anything. And there's some basic needs that they need. And we can really bless them by providing those needs and helping them, making them feel safe. As you see, they want friends. They want to be valued. And eventually they want to achieve their goals. And so we can help them in all of those processes. But just kind of knowing where they are and what stage they're in really helps you to be able to connect with them and identify with what they need. Okay? So be thinking about that as you meet with students and help them through that process. Now, I think all of you, if you've worked with them, you know that there's a lot of things that they're wanting from home. Food, trying to find a way to communicate. It's easier these days than it was back in the Stone Ages with all the apps and, you know, internet and FaceTime and all that now. But they still want to be validated. They still want people to accept them. A lot of them are nervous about how they speak. They don't want people to make fun of them. They want, you know, a lot of people are shy. They don't want to say anything and make a mistake. So they're looking for validation. They're looking for people to come alongside and accept them and to build them up and to work with them. So I think that's very important. That comes back to that trust factor. Oh, and a lot of them want to be accepted by the host country. They don't want to feel like they're an enemy or they stick out. I was doing this ministry back in 9/11 when, you know, we had a huge, as you remember, terrorist attack. And there were Muslim students who felt very concerned. I mean, they were very concerned about how people would view them and what might happen to them. And even if they weren't from the country, you know, even if they were not radicalized at all, they just felt like, oh, Muslims are not welcome right now because of all this terrorist thing and the tower coming down. And so that can happen on different levels all the time. So just be aware of that. So they are in transition. And so if you look at that picture, a lot of them are like the lady. They've left the home country. They've left the safety and the partnership of the home country. And they're just kind of jumping out there to this unknown And so we need to always remember they are in transition. And for international students, it's a big transition, right? And so sometimes as volunteers, though, as people doing the ministry, we feel like the guy on the right now. We're trying to welcome this huge transitioning cultural shift, and we don't know if we're able to support the weight of it, you know. So anyway, sometimes when we have a long afternoon, this is where we kind of get people back engaged, this slide. But anyway, so all right, so how do we actually do this? How do we actually go? How do we actually get people involved? So there's a couple of things, and hopefully what I want to do is I want us to have some time to talk about your situation and have some questions and answers on that. And here's the way I want to see this, kind of think about this. There are relationships with the college. There are cross-cultural issues. There are ways to help students, ways to meet students. And then there's the spiritual engagement, what I call spiritual engagement. And all of these things are important. We tend sometimes to, some people will be so focused on helping the basic needs, they are reluctant to get into spiritual issues. Then some people, all they want to do is deal with the spiritual issues, and they don't want to actually help the student. And so we need to find a balance in there of doing all of this, right? We can do both. We can help them, and we can get into a spiritual engagement with them, whether they come to church or not. So let's go through here. Now, some of this we're going to jump over just because you can read it in the book later, and I'd like to talk really more. But I can't stress enough, if you are able to form a good relationship with the college, it's just going to help you in so many ways. Because if you're that group that the college is concerned about, students are going to find out about it. And if you're that church that the college thinks, oh, they're great, they're doing a lot of things to help us, and they're really concerned about students, and they're really trying to help these people, then the students are going to know that too. They're going to see it from you, and they're also going to hear it from the staff. So it's very important. Finding a need and helping will go a long way with the school and with the students. So whatever that might be in your situation, find something that students need and try to help fill that need. Transparency. I don't know why there are some groups who don't want to be transparent. They want to play games with students. Unfortunately, there are churches that do that, but I really think the more transparent you are, the real crux of this is advertising, truth in advertising. So I always thought about it in two different ways, welcoming events and spiritual engagement. And you can mix it, but if you're doing a Bible study, I really think you need to be upfront and say, we're doing a Bible study, and this is what we're going to say. This is how we're going to do it. And if you're doing something that's a welcoming event, sure, you can have a spiritual conversation with somebody, but you're not getting them to something, and then it turns into an hour sermon that nobody's prepared for. So just being truthful in that, it goes a long way, I think. And the college will really appreciate that too. And then, of course, showing them Jesus. I mean, we want to be Jesus to them. We want to share with them the gospel. But I think that we need to do it in a holistic way, right? So I'll stop preaching on that. So here's some practical help. You know, we have an airport pickup, English language, cultural events, perhaps a Thanksgiving meal or any kind of holiday meal. Learn about their culture. Be a friend. And then I did a whole breakout one time on just these four words: love, live, listen, and learn. And we could spend all day just talking about that. But if you can remember those four words, it will really guide you in how you can interact with them. And I really think, really seriously, that being a learner is a real key to this, because as you learn from them, they really train you how to be better at what you're doing. And you also allow them that validation because they get to say something about their culture, something about their country. And a lot of times they're put in a situation where we just want to tell them all about United States, tell them all about, you know, life here, tell them all about Christianity. And they never get a chance to teach us something. And so I really am a big proponent of learning from the student. I think it's a great opportunity for us. So how to meet students. I think this might be where a lot of people want to spend some time and park here, but the host family / friendship family is perhaps the best way, I think, to interact with students. Now, I'm not thinking of host family as in your situation where they're actually living with you, right? Is that right? Okay. I'm thinking more of a friendship family where you adopt a student through your university or college. But for me, that is just a great way that you can get plugged in no matter what is going on. If your college or university already has that program, you can apply, just get in there and start working with students. And so it's a great way. If you have good relationships or if you want to start a relationship with the college, you might want to pick up students at the airport. You might want to volunteer with the International Student Office or offer to do something like pick up students and take them to Walmart. A lot of this will take some time to build the relationships, but don't be shy in thinking we can't work with the International Student Office. Well, you can. And if you have a good relationship, they'll love for you to do that. But it does go back to the relationship. Now, some of these may be for your students. If you have American students, don't neglect them on your team, because they can go as students and join the international club on campus, and they can interact and go on these trips with the international students. And so they can be sort of embedded as students into what's going on in a way that as non-students we can't. And then if you have a recognized student organization, or if you want to partner with one of them, then you could host, for instance, a welcome event or a Thanksgiving banquet or a holiday or some holiday meal or something like that. So these are some of the ways that you can do that. And obviously, you guys have met students through an outside organization with high school students. And that's perfectly fine too, you know? So that's a great way to do that as well. I'm not going to go through all this. Just be aware. You can read this in the booklet. If you've been to China, if you've been to another country, once you've had your first student in your home, you realize we're not on the same page when it comes to a lot of these things: relationships and tasks, individualism, group identity, direct versus indirect communication, different concepts of time and planning, and inclusion and privacy. So we did a cookout every year on Labor Day when I was doing the ministry, and every year the Indian students came an hour late to the cookout, even though everybody knew it was at 7 or whatever it was, even though everybody knew at 8 o'clock, an hour later, we would have this huge group of Indians show up. And a lot of times, we'd already eaten all the food, you know? So then I started learning, okay, we're going to have an extra set of chicken hot dogs, and we're going to have some extra food that we're not going to put out, because when they come, then we're going to put it all out for them. And so we learned that we're not going to get them there on time. Some of the other groups were there right on the dot, but not them. So that can happen in many different ways at many different times. And the whole idea of direct and indirect communication. And one of the first things when I got to China, the icebreaker was, "So Tom, how much money do you make?" And I was not prepared for that. We had a student from China that that we knew who was a graduate student, and she went to her professor's house. And so her icebreaker was, this is a nice house. How much did you pay for it? And so that didn't go over well with the professor. So these are just things. And the problem about it is that you can't prepare yourself because you can't envision another culture doing it differently until you're exposed and experience it. I mean, it's either you're in the club or you're not. And yes, you can read about it and you can try ahead of time, but a lot of times we find these things out through experience and it can be awkward. And that's where we have to have grace and we have to have that relationship of trust so that we can say, oh, I didn't mean to do that. It's not what, yeah. And then you can just be able to say, hey, we don't ask those questions or certain questions we don't ask. And if you work with Indian students, you know, they'll tell you that the question you don't ask them is you don't ask them what caste they're in. And so a lot of Americans say, oh, yeah, I've heard about this caste system. What caste are you in? And that's a big no-no. You just don't do that. So those are some of the things that we do need to be aware about. And I think that in some of that learning and some of that preparing, you can eat food from another region of the world, right? Watch movies, watch the foreign movies, quote-unquote, or international movies, and sit through it and read the subtitles and start to say, oh, this is how it sounds, and this is, you know, try to get the feel of their own culture ahead of time. Do research, read as much as you can, but just know there's always going to be those moments when you're caught off guard. You know, either they are or we are, but you just have to work through it. But there's more in the booklet on some of these issues, and some of you may have already gone through that. So let's talk about spiritual engagement, because we do want to engage them spiritually. One of the things that I struggled with, I was working with a lot of churches, and people had such different ideas of spiritual engagement. And a lot of people felt like it had to be at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, either in the worship service or in the Sunday school class. And as many of you know, I'd say 96% of these students are not Christians. They don't get up and go to church on Sundays, and to expect that they're going to do that is just not realistic. So you do get some who are curious, and they will come sometimes to the worship service. Problem is, the worship service is not geared for them. Most of them can't follow it. They have no idea what's going on. So what I want people to understand, the biggest frame here is, we have to share the gospel with them in venues that are appropriate for them. If they're not going to come to church, then share the gospel with them at your home. Share the gospel with them at a coffee shop. Share the gospel with them on a picnic. You know, find a place where they are willing to come and build the relationship and then have this spiritual engagement. And sometimes you're just going to be dialoguing spiritual questions. So I remember one time driving students to go rafting in Nanahela, and a guy was sitting next to me from India, and so he just had all these questions about Christianity. And so, okay, let's do it. So we just talked about, you know, Christianity and answering his questions as we were driving for several hours. Great. There's going to be plenty of opportunity to do that. Sometimes you will have what I call focused Bible study or a more structured Bible study. Try to do that appropriately for them in their context. If they're from a closed country and they're worried about people reporting them, don't make them go to a group Bible study. Just find a place and have a one-on-one Bible study, right? Those kinds of things. And then eventually you may be able to disciple them in a more structured way. When I use the word discipleship here, I'm talking about someone who's made a profession and they're ready to be all in Christianity. And then you can take it to a whole other level. But even then, you have to be aware. So just remember this, the Engle scale. Many of you have seen this. It's trying to help you understand that people do take a lot of baby steps in their progression of faith. And a lot of times we want to go from A to Z in one quick move. And sometimes you're just getting them from A to D. And especially when you deal with international students, a lot of them come from countries where there are very few churches or they don't have contact with Christians. You know, if you work with people from Japan, You know, sometimes they'll tell you, you're the first Christian I've ever met. We could do that for other countries as well. I've never been to church. This is just normal, and I think you know that. And but it's we sometimes forget, and we go back to, let's go straight to first contact, let's have a profession. And that usually doesn't happen. So there are steps that we need to make sometimes. Again, when you're dialoguing, you're answering questions, you're planting seeds, you're listening for context, building plausibility platforms. If you're working with PhD level folks, they have got a lot of questions. And these are smart people. They don't know anything about the Bible, but they are smart people. And so sometimes you're just trying to help them understand it's plausible. Okay, can we, let's just deal with that, first of all. Christianity is plausible. And then you can dialogue. And again, don't be trapped. When I say don't be trapped in the box, don't be trapped in the church box, that everything has to be on a strict time schedule and it has to be done inside the church's four walls. You know, do the ministry wherever you have to do it. It's my motto. Focused Bible studies, same kind of thing. I think the biggest thing here is find a study that's appropriate for their English level. If they're not proficient, it needs to be super easy. So just be aware of that. Don't take them through Calvin's Institutes if they can't even read English well. So, you know, it needs to be appropriate for the level. Give time to people to process. They're going through a lot culturally. They're processing all kinds of things. Give them some time. And if you have that relationship, they'll come back and continue with the questions. And again, with discipleship, same thing. Probably the biggest thing here is they're going back to a culture, most of them, that is not an American culture. And even if they came faithfully to your church every week for 4 years, they're not going back to an American church. And so you have to be thinking about that. They're not going to have a nice white church with columns and a cross on it a lot of times. Some of them are going to be meeting in, you know, nondescript house churches or in places where they don't want people to know that they're worshiping there because they could be arrested. So there's things like that we need to kind of think through when we do discipleship. And we're here to help. Thank you.